Taste of Country Nights with Evan Paul on demand. This episode is a twofer. We got two interviews in here. One, the first one with Corey Kent. Stick around and make sure you're listening to hear his story about the Oak Ridge Boys and how when he was opening up for them when he was 11 years old, 10 years old. Also, at the end of that, we're going to slide right into an interview with Wei Jennings. Came into the studio and joined us as well. Thank you so much for checking out Taste of Country Nights on demand. Let's get into it. We're hanging out here with Corey Kent, man. What's going on,
man? Just got into town and making my rounds. You know, they stack me up pretty good when I'm here, so just working
every
head
time,
down and working.
Every time you come by, I gotta ask for an update. Do you still have the original black bandana that you've been carrying around as a baby?
I do, man. Yeah. I do. Yeah, dude. People ask for it all the time, and I'm like, dude, I would love to give this to you, but it's just not going to happen.
So, where is it right now?
It's in my suitcase. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't even unpacked since I've been here, but yeah, just, I don't know. You know, I lose everything. I lose my phone a couple times a day. I'll like leave my wallet places or my car keys or whatever. And I'll leave really important things. And somehow I have not lost this bandana. It's just like, even when I think I lost it, it appears. And I'm just like, well, it's meant to be, you know? I think it's literally, I think my mom got me that bandana when I was like 15 or something like that. Like I've just had it for so long.
And I mean,
it just reappears.
You're naming tours after it.
And stuff.
You know, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
I want to first talk about Co Wetzel's song, the one that you and Co did, Rocky Mountain Low. The thing that stuck out most to me is how you guys both recorded this roguely without your record label's permission or even know. They didn't know that this was happening. Did you guys feel strongly enough to be willing to challenge? Like if you did all that, gave it to the label and they still were like, I can't do it. How strongly about that song did you feel?
Well, I knew that we were going to cut that song and put it out regardless. And I really wanted it to be the first thing that anybody heard from the new project. And, like that was pretty much a non-negotiable for me. And they were behind the song, like the label and management, everybody loved the song, but they didn't know that we were going to get Co to hop on it. So, I mean, you have so many, especially at the major label, you know, level, you've got so many people that have got to sign off on something. And then, you know, like for Co and I to make it work, like our manager's got to say yes. And our schedules have to align and we've got to coordinate so much. And we knew, you know, Co and I have both done features before, but kind of sparingly, like we're not the guys that just have a ton of features. So we knew what it was like to get all the way to the finish line with one of those things and how tedious it was. And we were just like, if we want to do this, let's just do it. So we just booked the studio out in Cisco, Texas. And, we booked our friends to shoot it. One of his media guys and one of my buddies in town, in Texas. And we're just like, we're just going to do it so that they can't say no. Like if we're both just, you know, turn it in, hey, this is what's happening. Like, what are they going to do? You know, I mean, like they're not going to tell us no. Like, and if it's good, you know, so luckily it turned out good. And, everybody was on board after that, but we just wanted to eliminate any chance of it not happening because of logistics or, you know, something dumb.
When you go rogue per se, who pays for that?
We did out of our pockets.
So you felt so strong about this that you both split the costs, or is somebody like, is it like the two checks, please?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Wow. Well,
you know, it was my song and I was asking him to be on it. So I was just like, dude, like, I'll just cover it and we'll figure it out later.
Wow.
So, you know, Co being on that song was a favor to me, you know. I don't think he views it that way, but I view it that way. You know, he loved the song and was like, hell yeah, man. Like, as soon as I sent it to him, he was like, that is a damn song, man. Like, let's do it. Which is, you know, was kind of a surprising response to me. I kind of expected, even though we're boys and like, I love Co and we have a great friendship. You know, he's a busy man. He's got a lot of asks coming his way. He's coming off of the most played song on country radio for last year. You know, I mean, the amount of guys that are guys and girls or, you know, collabs coming his way. I can't imagine what his emails look like, how many asks he's getting. So I kind of expected maybe a little more hesitancy, but there was zero hesitancy. So that's when I was just like, well, then let's go. Like, if you're in, let's eliminate anybody else that might not be in, and let's just do it. And if, you know, a few thousand dollars here or there stands in the way, then I'll just cover it. So
who's the bigger girly girl dad, you or Co Etzel?
Oh, I don't know, man. I haven't been around Co as in terms of like him being a dad now. Still pretty fresh for him. I would say that because I have three girls, probably me, you know, like, at this point I feel like I'm entering like expert girl dad, you know, lane, whatever that means. But dude, you can see a real shift, you know, in a man, especially when they have a little girl, you know, but it's always for the better. And Co is, you know, taking it really seriously. And, you know, I think a lot of people see him as a wild man, and he definitely has been, and he's got that side to him. But also, man, Co's just one of the best dudes in country music. He's just a good human being. And so I have no doubt he's crushing fatherhood, and he loves it, man.
Tell me about you fast tracking Empty Words right out like that. So, I mean, yeah, from the outside looking in, it looks like, I'm like, yo, your boy Corey Kent's going rogue. First, he's recording a song without the label. Now he's fast tracking this. What made you put this song out so fast?
I mean, the fans, like, that's, they wanted it, you know, and that's the cool part, I think, about being a country artist in 2026 is you have this direct line of communication with your fan base, you know, that you don't have to, you know, we talk about A&R, which is like inside baseball term for, you know, the team at the label that helps you put together your record. And not that, I mean, those guys do a great job and they're very necessary, but the fans are kind of A&R in the records these days. If you let them, they'll tell you what they want. And so when, you know, when we tease a song and they go, we want this right now, it's like, awesome, let's do it. You know, and we've always taken pride, especially since the early days. I've got a tattoo on my arm of a ship. And we always called ourselves a pirate ship. I got another one on my leg that is like specifically for this. But we always just said, like, we're going to be the pirate ship going up against the cruise liners. And we got a small crew that'll outwork everybody, and we'll be able to turn on a dime. And, you know, with hard work and that small crew, we can take over. And so that's the mentality that we've carried in even to being, you know, now a major label act. It's like, we still better be able to turn on a dime, you know, and that's a testament to our team and our label for trust in the artist, which is a lost art, I think. It's such a data driven, you know, we got to read the numbers and then we're going to decide what's next. And it's just like, sometimes a song just makes people feel something and you got to run with that. And that's what Empty Words was. And, they raised their hand and said, we want this song. So we were like, well, let's give the people what they want.
Dang. And you've been doing this. If people don't know, you've been touring on the road in some forms since you were 11. Yeah. I saw you.
It sounds crazy when you say that.
For the Oak Ridge Boys, yeah, when you were 11 years old.
Yeah, man.
What is it like opening up for the Oak Ridge Boys and being 11? Like, I was pitching baseball at that time.
Yeah. Well, it makes it sound like I was some sort of like child prodigy, which I was not. I was just, you know, fortunate to be put in a situation where I got some stage time, and I was surrounded by a band of killers, you know. The band has gone on, some of the guys in the band, like Wyatt Flores, the drummer, was in that band with me.
Okay.
We were opening up for the Oak Ridge Boys at 11. He was 10. Yeah, he was 10, man. Jake was always just such an incredible drummer.
Was Elvira a thing?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so like,
they had all the hits, man. Like, we,
but like, as a kid, like, what did they say to you? Do they talk to you backstage? Like, what are they? Hey, kid.
You know, funny enough, dude, at that show, actually, we didn't really get to talk with them. But when I was like, maybe a few years later, I was in Nashville, just trying to, you know, meet people and connect with them or whatever, and I was helping. The reason that we got that show is because the guy that was managing our band also managed the Oak Ridge Boys.
Wow.
And he was a living legend, Jim Halsey out of Oklahoma. He based his whole operation out of Oklahoma, where I was from. So he saw me and was like, dude, this kid's got something. And, you know, started managing this band that we were in and putting us on these shows. But he was like, why don't you come to Nashville with me? I'll introduce you to some people. And what I thought was going to be like a networking thing ended up being me, like, essentially being the assistant to the Oak Ridge Boys for the day. And they were like, at 4:30 in the morning, we need you to go to the Cracker Barrel and get some biscuits. And so I was like running around, and I didn't know there were multiple, like where I'm from, there's one of everything, right? Okay. If there's a Cracker Barrel, there's only one. I got to Nashville and there's like multiple. So I went to the wrong Cracker Barrel to get the Oak Ridge Boys biscuits at 4:30 in the morning.
Wow.
But I did get to meet them then, and they were super kind and very complimentary of our band, you know, cause we were a bunch of kids playing music that, you know, people had never seen kids that age play Western swing music.
Yeah,
you know,
dude.
Anybody playing Western swing was probably 70 years older or older. It's a 1930s era style music. So they were super impressed with these kids that were playing this old Bob Wills stuff, man. It was, they were very nice to me. And, I have some funny memories from that, but, yeah, just like, man, just really fortunate to be put in a position pretty early on to figure out, you know, like what I wanted to do with my life. It's never really been a question. It's just kind of been like that. Well, I'm kind of good at this and I'm getting the opportunities. Like this is what I should do.
And you're going back out on the road with Al Dean this year.
Got back. Actually, we went to Australia, and New Zealand.
That already happened.
Yeah. We just got back.
Oh, so what was that like, dude?
Bro.
Are y'all like texting buddies now? This is like the second time, third time?
Right? Yeah, second time touring with Al Dean. Absolutely. Like, I would say I'm probably closer to Al Dean than anybody in country music. Yeah, I mean, even just this last week, like, we buried my grandfather, who was just my person. Like, he was, you get one, you know, God gives you just one person that you really connect with. I can't even tell you why. He was just my dude, right? And, I didn't post anything about it on social media. My wife actually mentioned it in a like kind of in passing, you would have had to really read to know what was going on in my life. And I got a text from Al Dean saying, dude, I'm so sorry about your papa. Like, thinking of you, love you, bro. Just, it's deeper than work, you know, with Jason. Like, he's really just become big brother and, been really cool. To, you know, I mean, he's a hero, dude. He's up there for me. You know, his early stuff was really influential in making me think that I could blend rock and country. So to have that guy that you listened to on the radio and looked up to and just thought, this guy's a real bona fide rock star.
Yeah.
For that guy to be texting you about the loss of your grandpa is just takes you back, man. And it makes you realize that all these people are just people, you know? Like at the heart of it, like they're living, breathing people with a heart that care about you. And, you know, I don't know if that's normal in pop music or hip hop or whatever, but in country music, there's a lot of good dudes in here and it's a brotherhood.
You got Al Dean's gate code?
No, I don't have Al Dean's gate code.
How do you get?
But I would love to go hang out in that guy's backyard. Have you seen that thing?
Yeah,
it's like, it's like the freaking Wynn Resort back there, bro.
You haven't been there?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Well, I live in Texas. So
okay.
We thought about probably maybe a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, right after we got off our first tour, he was like, hey, there's a spot down the road for me that's for sale. You should go look at it. And we went and toured the place, and my wife and I were pretty seriously thinking about moving to Nashville, and we almost became neighbors, but we ended up staying put in Texas. But
okay,
but I don't have the gate code. I can't help you there.
As a girl dad, how is it seeing the women in country music shining right now? How does that feel as a girl dad?
It's cool. I mean, I think women across the music landscape right now, even outside of country, are having a moment. Like, you talk about Olivia Dean and, you know, Sabrina and some of these girls that, like, admittedly, it's tougher for me to like connect with a female's music just because it's harder for me to relate. Right.
Yeah.
But man, the music is so good right now. Like, I don't even have to relate to it. I just like it. And it's been a minute since I've been able to say that. Like, there's just a whole era of female artists. I just played a show. I filled in on a show in Texas at Billy Bob's. They did this, they put together this amazing lineup. I mean, it was, excuse me, Turnpike Troubadours, Parker McCollum, Megan Maroney, Hudson Westbrook, Tucker Wetmore. I know I'm missing people, but it was just an incredible lineup. And Pat Green was part of it. Pat Green dropped out at the last second. They knew I lived in town in Texas. So they called me and they were like, come sit in here and play. And it ended up being me and Hudson and Megan and Justin Moore song swapping. And that was our round. And there was earlier rounds. But, you know, just listening to Megan play her stuff and just seeing how people connect with this stuff. You know, there was a comment made. Justin was like complimenting me on how we had never met before. And Justin leaned over and he was like, hey, I'm Justin Moore. Nice to meet you, Corey. Man, you sing your ass off. I was like, man, thank you so much. And then, you know, I made a comment. I was like, well, what's even cooler than singing your ass off is watching Megan not even have to sing her songs. Like, the, just she starts the first few words and they just sing the whole thing. It's so cool to see. And, you know, as a girl dad, you know, there's, I think, especially in country music, like you can, it's easy to look up to these women, especially, dude, I was just in Australia, New Zealand with Aldine. Lainey Wilson happened to be there. So we met at the little hotel restaurant and hung out for a couple hours and caught up. And I just have so much respect for her specifically as a human being. And it's like easy to be like, hey girls, here's a role model. Like this girl is salt of the earth and also a rock star. And, you know, if she can do it, you can do it. And whatever that might be that you want to do, you know, whether you want to be a doctor or a country artist or whatever, like she's a normal girl that did, she accomplished her dream. And so to be able to point at that and be like, girls, you can do anything. Like
that's awesome.
Lainey is a normal person that is a superstar, you know? And then also took my girls out when we were playing a show with Ella, and Ella was super sweet and brought my girls on stage to sing with her. So I was like, girls, you don't have to do this. I know it's scary. There's like 20,000 people out there. But, and my girls are 7 and 5 at the time. And I was like, you don't have to do this. But let me tell you, from a guy who has lived a little bit more life than you, if you don't do this, if you don't go out there, she invited you on stage. If you don't go out there and sing this song with her, you're going to grow up and wish that you did.
Yeah.
And so I was really proud of my girls. I was like, I'm leaving it up to you. I'm not going to make you get out there. They both walked out there and sang the song with her and crushed it. Like I was so, you know, one of the proudest moments in my life, just to see these girls that were so tiny get out there and, you know, be courageous and brave. Like easy to get stage fright and just lock up, but they embraced it. They had a blast and Ella was super sweet to do that. But there's, again, just a lot of good human beings in country music, and the girls are having a moment for sure.
So you mentioned you and Lainey at basically a hotel bar or whatever. What's that like? Does she get paparazzi'd, or is it just y'all two in the corner and no one says a word?
Well, it helps that we're on the other side of the world.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
You know, we were in Sydney, Australia, so we're a little more incognito over there. And, you know, Lainey's pretty easily recognizable anywhere. So there were, you know, a couple people that stopped by and wanted to say hi, but people were pretty respectful, or they just didn't know who the hell we were. but we got like probably the most uninterrupted time that we've ever had together, just hanging out and catching up.
Yeah, because if that happened in Nashville, like no way, you guys would. Yeah,
no chance, man. No chance. It was awesome, man.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and what's really cool is you know, the genuine friendships that form. You know, I don't think we talked about music at all. We talked about babies and she's getting married soon, and we talked about just real life. And it's been cool to become genuine friends with these people, you know.
What tell me real quick about a meet and greet with a fan that sticks out most.
Oh man. That's a good question. That's a good question. I think there was a festival. Man, I'm going to misremember. They kind of all run together. But there was a festival where this kid walked up to me, and there was a chain link fence between us. But I think it's on my socials somewhere. But it was the oddest thing that I've ever been brought to sign. It was a bass flip-flop where you like slide your feet in and your toes are through the mouth of the bass.
Okay.
It's like, you want me to sign these for you, buddy? All right. Like, whatever, man. You know, anything for the fans, I guess. But I don't know. It's just like the stuff that people want you to sign, you know, sometimes they'll like hand you a freaking Louis Vuitton purse and be like, sign this. You're like, you sure? You want me to sign this? This must be fake, you know?
There's a woman in country, or it might be a guy, I'm not sure, that has a prosthetic leg. Aldean has signed it. I think Luke Bryan has signed it. Have you signed the prosthetic leg?
I think I would remember if I had.
Okay.
I don't think I have.
That's when you know you've made it.
Now, like, I've drawn the line. I don't sign body parts anymore.
Okay, that's interesting.
Dude, I could tell you some stories, but Craig Colorado is why.
Okay.
And this is back in my wilder days, but yeah, I ended up waking up the next morning and seeing a picture of somebody that I signed and was like, I can't do this anymore. This is not good. This is not good for the brand, man. So I guess I can make an exception for a prosthetic though. You know?
That's good to know. Yeah. Okay. Well, dude, thank you so much for coming by, man.
Yeah, of course, man. It's always good to talk to you, and thanks for all the good questions. I feel like we get to topics that I don't normally hit.
That's
on.
That's what I like to hear.
I appreciate it, man.
Hell yeah, man. And as a special bonus on this episode, we also sat down with Wade Jennings, and he played a song for us. We can only play the ending of it here just for copyright purposes, but you'll hear the ending of the song, and then we'll jump into the interview with Wade Jennings.
I had to be baptized by fire in order to truly be saved.
All right, man, we're hanging out here with Wade Jennings. Tell me a little bit about that song. Give me the story.
Oh, man, I was with my buddy David Wade and Jim Moose Brown. We was over at the Moose Lodge, is what Jim calls his recording studio. And we was writing songs. I came to Nashville and I wrote with quite a few different people. But that particular writing session, we've had the first track of the album come out of it and the last track of the album. And coincidentally, the last track of the album is the title track of the album. But I just wanted to write a song that's kind of been like my journey, you know, because I went through the depths of hell to get to where I am today, you know. And I just remember, actually, David brought up the title, but when he said baptized by fire, I immediately thought about John the Baptist saying, I'm going to baptize you by water, but soon there'll be one greater than me who's going to come and baptize you with the Holy Spirit and by fire. So I thought, man, if that ain't a true testament to a good song, then I don't know what is. We sat down and started writing it, and all these visions of my mama back in the day came through my brain, and it's just all these lyrics started coming out of my heart, man. It's just turned into the most somber thing I've ever had anything to do with. Baptized by fire is like, it truly flowed right out of my soul, man.
Did you, when you go to record those two songs, did you go knowing they would be the first and the last bookends?
No. The recording on this particular album here was kind of crazy. I mean, I had a hard time letting go of the lyrics on a lot of the songs we had written. I kept going and rewriting a lot. And it's just, I just felt very vulnerable. This album, you know, it's like, it's not what I normally do. You know, I mostly got these, you know, Southern rock kind of feel songs, like upbeat, like rockers. But I just wanted to put out an album that felt like me. So it took me a long time to go in and record these songs. And when I did, I don't even remember what order we recorded them in, but I was completely obsessed with every part of this album. So the recording process, the writing process, the video process, the order of the album, the artwork, I've like nitpicked every little thing about it. So the order came about because I listened to it in every order you could possibly go.
Okay, okay.
I was like, well, this feels like one thing. So
wow.
We decided that. And it just so happened that the first song and the last song were both written with Moose Brown.
Which song would you say on this record pushed you most out of your comfort zone?
Out of my comfort zone. I think Force of Nature and I'll See You Soon, probably. Because me and my buddy Wes over here was just playing guitar. We write a lot of songs together. And we sat down and we wrote probably 10 or 12 songs that day. And then my wife come down and told us this story about her being in a nursing home. And she worked in a nursing home. And she noticed this old couple. One of them passed away, and then the other one died of heartache. And she said that was the truest testament of love that she had ever seen. And me and Wes both looked at each other with, like, tears in our eyes, like, we got to write this. So we sat down and we wrote this song called I'll See You Soon. And we had to stop writing it three times. You know I mean, because it was just that, I don't want to call it a sad song. I don't want to call it a happy song. I want to call it a true love song from beginning to end. You know, a lot of times people want to leave out the end of the love story because it's hard. You know what I mean? But it's really beautiful as well. So that song, In Force of Nature, came out after we had written All Day. And those two songs are probably two of my favorite on the whole album.
What about, you have one about your wife, right?
Yeah, What Loving You Does. Yeah.
Give me the exact moment you play that for her. Walk me through her reaction from like verse one to verse two. Is she into it or is she like, here's another one?
Oh, she she loves the song. She don't like the video because I begged her. I was like, baby, we're about to have a baby. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing. I need you to be in this video. You know what I mean? So, because it's What Loving You Does. You're my wife, right? So, she's like, I'm pregnant. I'm not going to be in the video. But she finally did it. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So, she's in the video with me. But that's song right there. Believe it or not, I did not write it. A friend of mine sent me two songs. And one of them was What Loving You Does. And the other one was Take His Hand. And Take His Hand, I had to kind of make fit me. You know what I mean? So, I rewrote the verses in it. What Loving You Does, I just started thinking about my wife from the first lyrics all the way through it. So I was like, because we spend a lot of time down in Florida, and we take our kids to the beach and all that good stuff. So when it started playing, it felt good. So I was like, I'm just going to record this one, you know. So bam, in the studio, he's recording it, and like every musician in the studio was like, now that's a song.
Yeah.
Yeah, What Loving You Does is a fun one, man. We had a great time with that.
Hey, congrats on the daughter. How is your wife doing?
She's doing well. She's been nursing, and she's been sleeping sitting straight up on the couch. And we started out trying to do the bassinet next to the bed and all that, but the baby nurses so much, and she's used to being, you know, held. So
I swear no baby's sleeping those.
I know.
It's a scam. Neither of us did, too.
That's exactly what I told my wife. Dude. Right there, I was like, these are a scam. These are cribs.
That's like, old school, man.
Catch alls for laundry. That's all it is.
Yes.
And my wife won't even let me use it for that now.
That's crazy, man. Well, speaking of the daughter, you have sons and a daughter. What's it like sitting down? What's the difference in writing a song for your son or for a daughter? Is there a difference?
Well, yeah, because honestly, most boys are like boys. They're all boy all the time. Girls, man, I said a prayer one time when I was young. I said, Lord, I want to be surrounded by women.
There you go.
And you can tell you right now, good Lord's got a good sense of humor. He gave me a bunch of daughters. So, so yeah, man, writing a song for your girls is hard, you know, because you got to get it right or it's going to, I don't want to call girls emotional, but they are a little more emotional than a boy.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So it's hard. It's difficult. That's something I have not accomplished yet because, you know, it's got to be right, but I'm going to put out a great song for my daughters one day.
Okay. Make it like a Christmas gift or something.
Like a Christmas gift?
Yeah, that way it'll weigh even more. Be like, Daddy wrote you a Christmas song. It doesn't have to be a Christmas song, but
yeah,
I like saving all the big stuff for Christmas gifts. That's just that's what I do.
I do, too. When I was young, my aunts and uncles and my dad and all them got together and did a album together and gave it to my grandfather. It was pretty neat.
That's awesome. That's cool, man. You started this career pretty late, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not late in normal people terms, but in like football player terms, you know, 30s, you know. How would you have handled it if you were younger? Success? You think you would have gone nuts?
I probably would have. I mean, I went nuts going as late as I did. You know what I mean? It's like my first half of my career was just a mess and a blur. You know what I mean? It's like I just wanted to be the wildest, craziest guy in town. It didn't turn out well for me. God had other plans. He waited for me to get sober and put my head on straight before anybody started really hearing my music. But if you dig back deep enough, you'll find a whole bunch of crazy. But yeah, I'm glad I started it later, because there ain't no telling if I'd have survived it at a younger age, honestly.
Hey, how are you doing like now? We haven't had you in here in about 18 months. So can you give us like an update?
Yeah, man, I'm still sober. It's been 7 years. I had another baby. Still married and happy. Live out in Pennsylvania now. Live in a beautiful neighborhood. Great place to raise kids. We're part of a great church and a community. And life is just blessing after blessing, man.
How'd you get to Pennsylvania?
I was on tour a bunch of years ago, and I met the woman of my dreams, and I asked her to marry me, and she did. And, you know, most of my family's passed away. You know, my dad passed away in 2019, my mom in 2013. So, and all of her parents are still alive and family. So I wanted my kids to have family around, and we decided Pennsylvania was the place to be. Plus, you know, the falls up there are beautiful. I mean, the winters, especially this last one, rough.
Yeah,
But falls and summers and springs, the most beautiful place in the world.
That's cool, man. When you were a kid, did you used to get cool Christmas cards, like from famous people?
Yeah, I did. My grandfather sent me quite a few cards from all over the world, honestly. And one time he brought me this backpack from Singapore. It was pretty neat. But yeah, I love postcards, and that's what I love about the neighborhood I live in, is it looks like a postcard in a lot of places.
Yeah. How do you tour now with the newest edition? Does that change anything?
Well, yeah. This year I wanted to do a little bit less dates than I've done in the past. And it's been that way as years go by, because I want to have a perfect balance between family and career. You know, I want to be a very present father, because, you know, this with my 5-year-old daughter, she was born during COVID. So I was there a lot for her, you know. And then when I went back to work, I started leaving. It's like every time I'd leave, it'd break her heart. You know what I mean? Then I'd come back, we'd get close, pick a Steve's again, and then I'd leave, it'd break her heart again.
Damn.
But over time, she got numb to that. And it's like she stopped getting attached to me. You know what I mean? And it's one of the hardest things in the world, because now we brought a new baby home. And where it was the happiest moment, one of the happiest moments of my life, to our young kids, it was like, oh no, we're being replaced, kind of thing. You know what I mean? So, this time around, I just wanted to, I want to bring my family real close together as one unit, rather than anybody being jealous of each other or anything like that. It's hard. It's hard to stay away from your family and do this, but it's also hard to be home too much too, because then your kids get too attached to you and it hurts them more when you leave. So, you know, I just pray to God every day and for his plan to come apparent, because I obviously ain't got the best plan in the world. But I know he does. So that's what we're going to do.
All right. And I want to talk about the beard, because obviously people can't see it, but was that a 6-incher down there at the point?
Well, it's getting longer and longer. Yeah. I stopped cutting it a long time ago. Matter of fact, I stopped cutting it during COVID. It's just gotten longer and longer.
What's it look like when you first wake up, though?
Oh, man, you don't even want to know. Actually, when I first wake up, it's just kind of matted to my face. Actually, I do morning coffees on my Facebook quite a bit, so you can tell what it looks like. But the worst part of it is right when I get out of the shower. You know, right when I get out of the shower, it's like, boom! I got this, big old honey badger stuck in my face.
What's the routine like?
Oh, man, you just get out the shower, you put a bunch of beard oil in it, you hit it with a blow dryer, and, you know, call it good. And that's it.
Hey,
that's
do you have routine. A certain beard oil that you go with?
Yeah, I use that Gibbs stuff from Sports Clips over.
The one I use is, I don't know how I got hooked on it, but it's the old wrestler, Mick Foley. Oh, yeah. He has his own line of beard oil, and it's, right? Because he has a beard.
Does it kink it up or what?
I don't know, but no. It's like mint vanilla, and I can't find it anywhere else. And boy, when you put that on, it feels like you're walking through like a rainforest, man.
Is it like tea tree kind of stuff?
And I think so. No, it just smells like peppermint. I don't have it on today, but
it is like that tea tree stuff then.
Yeah,
like
I don't know.
Your face, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, 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 okay. Yeah, that's where it's at, man. Don't let him fool you.
Mick Foley.
Yeah. I'll send you the link, man.
I've been watching him since I was a little kid. I never expected him to have a beard oil. Cactus Jack on my face.
Yeah, he's the man. I'm telling you, this beard oil will get you. But anyway, dude, thank you so much for coming by, man. Mm-hmm. And love the record, and people are going to be into it. I'm telling you.
I hope so, man.
Hell yeah.
We worked hard on it.